is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Artificial intelligence, NVIDIA, and then DeepSeek. We're telling a story here that is an illustration of how technology works in the 20th and now 21st century. The breakthrough, and then I welcome John Cochran of Stanford University, a professor of economics, who is also an esteemed fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing his Substack blog, Grumpy Economist. He's anything but grumpy. He's cheerful. But right now we're turning to the matter that made all of Wall Street frown, and as far as I know, the oligarchs of the universe frowned when a startup, not even a monetized shop, a research development called DeepSeek out of China presented evidence that the $1 billion you might need or $100 million minimum you might need to train the chips that NVIDIA turns out to turn to answer the questions that the public has about artificial intelligence, that might be reducible by a magnitude that I can only guess at because my minus is very weak. John, a very good evening to you. It was $100 million, maybe $1 billion, say the lords of the artificial intelligence. And then it comes in about $5 to $6 million, maybe some more pricing on top because of research, but certainly not $100 million. Was this, if I read your column correctly, this was always going to happen. It was a question of when. Good evening to you, John.
Good evening. Yes, that's the way things work. We invent a new technology. We figure out, wow, it can do amazing things at prodigious cost. And then the cost cutters get to work and figure out how to do it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And that's, you know, since the first computers had vacuum tubes in them. And look what's happened to computers. Artificial intelligence and machine learning, the way they work is to be just computing power is cheap. So we'll just throw lots of computing power at things. Well, computing power was cheap until you scaled that up into the $100 million range. That focuses the mind on, can we do this in this case with a cleverer software that doesn't just throw spaghetti at the wall, but tries to do it computationally cheaper. That turned out there was a lot to be gained there. Of course, the next thing that's going to happen is NVIDIA's chips. Other people are going to figure out how to make chips that do computing faster. So those costs are going to come down spectacularly as they just did. That's really the story told over and over again in economics, but people forget costs like that are going to come down when there is lots of hearty competition in the market.
Once upon a time, the Titanic was a dominant story, and I've always been puzzled about how when I first started watching The Night to Remember, that wonderful movie about Titanic, I thought everybody lived in a first-class cabin. Everybody had sheets that rustled when they took the children out of bed and put the life vests on them. It wasn't for many years that I learned that there were just a handful of first-class passengers on Titanic. It was mostly steerage, eating way down below and sleeping below the waterline. And the reason I bring that example up is the presumption of artificial intelligence that only the rich should apply. This is for the highest end people. But in fact, what I learned from your blog is that it was always going to be the money, the major significance here was going to be in the mass of people using it. And lowering costs, entry costs, was always going to be part of the story to make everybody money. Have I read you correctly, John?
The point I would make is not so much the rich versus the poor and the customers. The question is, where is the money going to come from AI? Where's the social benefit and the money going to come out of AI? Is it the producers of AI who will be able to make a ton of money and somehow recoup those hundreds of millions of dollars of investment? Or is it going to be you and me? And the answer is, it turns out, like many things, it's going to be you and me. It's going to be not just you and me, the users of AI, the people who can find a niche for this model, who have, you know, for example, program up the AI assistant for the tire shop to help you figure out what tires you want for your car. You know, it's the use of AI is where it's going to be profitable. And I think the example I used was who really made money out of the railroads. Turns out the railroads didn't make a lot of money. Initially, the people who bought land in Kansas made money because you could grow wheat there and send it to markets. Eventually, those costs got competed down, and the benefit of railroads was we all got cheap wheat, and that's really going to be the benefit of AI. Don't measure the stock market as the social benefit. The stock market tells you about the value of monopoly profits. It doesn't tell you about the social benefit of enormous productivity improvements that are available for free to the rest of us. And that's where AI is going.
So I should always pay attention to when somebody says they have a virtual monopoly that guarantees that they won't soon enough. Is that it, John?
Unless that monopoly is guaranteed by the government. The only durable monopolies are those imposed by the government. But this is a great example of the supposed first mover advantage. We already knew that wasn't right because there's four or five U.S. AI companies who were all the first mover. But the supposed economies of scale that it took $100 billion to get the thing going, well, innovators come in and figure out how to do it cheaper, and so much for that monopoly.
We've discussed the America Online from the late 20th century. And my memory is that every other day you got a disk in the mail. You got them too, John. You were supposed to say,
Yeah,
put it in your computer and you can talk to the world. Early internet. What we did not realize at the time, that the $20 or so they were charging us a month was the wrong way to approach the internet. It was eventually going to be what it is today. Totally available for everyone. And on the internet would be the monetizing, not the thing itself. But we didn't know that in the late 20th century. And some of the smartest people in the world teamed up with AOL. Remember the AOL Time Warner deal? They even had the word AOL on the top of that beautiful building at 59th Central Park West and 59th Street. And I think of that as how it always happens. We always get fooled by new technology to think, well, I can afford it, so this is for the elite only. It never lasts, John. Was that always the same, or is it because of we have a better form of capitalism today? We allow people to run with it.
Well, capitalism is about allowing people to innovate and unseat established competitors. This is the fourth time this story has been told. Let me remind you, in the old days, computers. Well, IBM's got that wrapped up. They'll be making monopoly profits forever. Here comes Apple and Microsoft. Second time around, the internet. The first movers, the great internet monopolies, AOL, Netscape, Yahoo, the FTC even broke up Microsoft's Internet Explorer because it was a monopoly. Has anyone heard any of this stuff again? And then, people keep saying, Google, Facebook, the FANGs, Amazon, they're a monopoly. They're all running scared about AI. And so, AI came and went, the great AI monopoly. It's going to get undercut by competition, too. It's the story of the world and a wonderful one for us consumers. But don't worry about the monopolies. Unless they're protected by the government, they're going to go soon enough.
And the chip makers, if I read your remarks and the remarks of some colleagues that you cite, the chip makers are likely to be the profit makers here, not necessarily this company, but the company in the future, because the cheaper it is, the more chips you need.
Well, we'll see about that. That could go either way. In the end, chips are also a commodity business. Remember the 1990s, the great, we need industrial policy to make memory chips in the U.S. and not Japan. Memory chips are now like number two red winter wheat. They're so much a commodity. NVIDIA made a lot of money because it had, for the moment, the fastest available chips that are good for AI because it's graphic processors. So those became unusually expensive, sort of the way gasoline is expensive after a hurricane. Everybody needs it. They are the only ones who can produce this thing. But there's nothing like that to sharpen minds. First, how to write programs that don't need the expensive thing. And second, of course, how other makers can produce those things that are in shortage. So that was never going to last. And it, either both competitive supply and people figuring out substitutes and demand were going to happen. And here they go. Sorry, NVIDIA. They'll still have a great, great business going. They just won't be making outrageous profits on it.
John Cochran of the Hoover Institution, and he teaches at Stanford University, writing Grumpy Economist. We're going to turn to a subject that John has written about recently, And it turns out it's going to be a major feature of the Canadian election upcoming. Housing. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.